Now, the federal debt has been growing for decades. Last week, despite a long period of economic growth, it hit a milestone for the very first time, $22 trillion. The Treasury Department says tax revenue has fallen while federal spending continues to climb. President Trump is said to be concerned about the debt and is looking to cut spending in the next budget, but during a news conference on Friday, he said it's not his top priority.
First, I have to straighten out the military. The military was depleted. And if we don't have a strong military that hopefully we won't have to use because it's strong, if we don't have a strong military, you don't have to worry about debt. You have bigger problems.
The Congressional Budget Office says the U.S. is projected to rack up annual deficits and incur more debt at rates not seen since the 1940s. So what does all this debt mean and how worried should we be about it? David Primo is the Annie and Mark Gabrielian Professor and Associate Professor of Political Science and Business Administration at the University of Rochester. David, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Oh, it's great to be with you.
Well, $22 trillion sounds like a lot of money. David, could you put that in context? I mean, is this a big enough amount that we should all be at least a little bit worried about it?
I certainly think it's something that we should be worried about. And one way to put it into context is to think of the size of our debt as a share of our national economy. Federal debt held by the public is now at about 80% of GDP, our gross domestic product. We haven't seen that percentage since 1950. So while this is certainly the highest level of debt we ever had in absolute dollars, it's also the highest percentage it's the highest debt we've seen as a percentage of GDP since, again, 1950. So we'd have to go back quite a bit in history, basically to the aftermath of World War II, when we had to run up massive debt and massive deficits in order to fund the war.
Now, the deficit went up a lot, the annual deficit, and thus the debt went up a lot after the Great Recession, as I understand things. But now we're in this time of sustained economic recovery, and it's still going up. Is that a little weird?
It isn't when you think about, again, the relationship between the national debt deficits and the size of the economy. Yes, we're out of the Great Recession. Yes, we have pretty robust economic growth, but it's not the kind of economic growth that we saw in the era of the rise of the internet. It's not the economic growth that we saw during the post-war era. We're seeing, you know, economic growth rates on the order of 2 or 3%, and if deficits and debt are rising faster than the economy is rising, then we're not going to have a stable level of debt relative to the share of the economy. So the problem is that yes, the economy is doing well, but it's not doing well relative to our level of fiscal responsibility. The fact is, we spend more every year than we take in. We've been doing that pretty consistently for the past few decades. And even when the economy is doing well, if your deficits are too high, you're going to continue to build up debt. And eventually, there's going to be a crisis if we don't do something.
A basic question, we have this national debt of $22 trillion plus dollars. To whom do we owe this money?
We owe it to a variety of sources. There's a myth that most of this debt is held by foreigners, but in reality, much of it is held by us, by investors. The Federal Reserve holds a little bit of debt as well. So in some sense, we owe this money to ourselves. But there comes a point where if you're continuing to pay interest on the debt, and you can't afford to pay that interest on the debt, and the debt keeps growing, it's going to crowd out the other programs that we think are important. So while we owe much of it to ourselves, we do rely quite a bit on foreign investment in our debt. And one reason is that it is considered very safe. If, however, our debt continues to grow and it's no longer viewed as a safe haven, we're going to see an exit from U.S. Treasury markets, and that's going to cause a whole boatload of problems that I'm happy to talk about at some point.
Talking to David Primo from the University of Rochester about the U.S. Annual deficit and the overall national debt. Yeah, talk about those potential problems, David.
Sure. So one of the reasons why interest rates have been so low on U.S. Treasuries is that we are basically the only game left in town in terms of safe places to park your money. So we see a lot of foreign investors. We see a lot of U.S. investors thinking that Treasuries are a great place to safely save your money. So you invest in U.S. debt essentially. That's one of the reasons we've seen remarkably low interest rates. And many economists are saying, well, you know, we don't have to worry about the debt anymore. We don't have to worry about deficits anymore because interest rates are so low. We can just keep borrowing. And, you know, the U.S. is paying a couple of percentage points on the debt. This is a great deal, actually. We should just not worry about it. But what happens when interest rates jump? It's not as though we've locked in the interest rate on this debt for the next 30 or 40 or 50 or 60 years. We eventually have to roll over this debt and issue new bonds. And if interest rates have spiked since then, since the last time those bonds were issued, all of a sudden our interest payments on the debt are going to skyrocket. And the effect of those increased interest payments is again going to mean that we're either going to continue to incur more and more debt to cover those interest payments, or we're going to have to reduce spending or increase taxes in a pretty significant way.
Another concern I've heard when it comes to the economic impact of the debt is that, okay, if this is this nice, safe investment, a lot of the available money to be loaned out there is getting sucked up by the U.S. government instead of greasing the wheels of the economy, instead of being loaned out to productive enterprise. Is that something we see at a measurable level?
Right now, that is not as much of a concern as it could be down the road, in part because interest rates are so low. We haven't seen that increase in interest rates, which would potentially cause corporations and others to pull back on investments and on loans. The issue is that once we do see those interest rates go up, then the effect of the high national debt, the effect of continuing to take on more debt is going to continue to push those interest rates up, and you're going to see a cycle upwards, and then at that point you will start to see more of that crowding out. And again, to be fair, there are very brilliant economists who just aren't concerned that this is an issue anymore, that this is an incorrect way of looking at the world, that we're going to have low interest rates, you know, basically into perpetuity, and we can just worry about it when the interest rates go up. And I think that's a bad way to make public policy, frankly. The time to deal with the nation's fiscal problems is precisely when you've got a situation where you have decent economic growth, you have low interest rates. Now is the time to make adjustments to entitlements, make adjustments to the drivers of spending in order to set up the country so that when we do hit another great recession, which inevitably will come, that's the way these things work, when we do see interest rates rise, we'll have the opportunity, we'll be in the position to deal with those problems effectively.
Looking at the politics of this, there seems like a bipartisan consensus that the debt is a big problem when the other party is in power. But when we control the White House, debt's not such a big deal. Is that something you've seen?
It's absolutely the case that the deficit and the debt are always a priority after we deal with all of the other priorities we have. So it's something that's very important, but just not right now. So the phenomenon that I observe, so you're absolutely correct that it's much easier to be concerned about the deficit and the debt when you're not in power. The other piece of it, though, is that you see this argument that when the economy is doing poorly, oh, well, we need to increase spending. We can't worry about deficits because the economy is doing poorly. And then when the economy is doing well, we say, well, the economy is doing well. We don't really have to worry about deficits and debt because we can easily manage the interest payments on the debt and just worry about the increase in the debt down the road. So no matter what period of time we're in, there's always a reason not to worry about the debt. The fact is, if it's never a priority, we're going to get to a crisis situation before we actually deal with the issue.
Right. There's this whole kind of economics, right, called Keynesian economics, where, mm-hmm. Okay, yeah, when the economy's bad, rack up that deficit, spend money, prime the pump, get the economy going. But then you're supposed to make up for it when things are going well, and then you nibble back away at the debt and bring it and zero it back out. That has not really happened, right?
It's that second piece that we're missing. Yes, we see some pullback. We saw some pullback in spending, for instance, in terms of share of the economy in the wake of the Great Recession. But we haven't seen as much of a pullback as we really should have. Government spending's sticky. Once you've created a program, it's very difficult to get rid of it. And I should note that much of what's driving up federal spending today and for the foreseeable future is entitlements. And entitlements are just going to continue to go up whether or not you've got a recession or not, Medicare spending and so on. And so that's going to just continue to put upward pressure on spending. So then anytime you have a recession, you're plopping that additional Keynesian stimulus spending on top of an already precarious spending situation. So we're just not really well set up for dealing with fiscal problems.
We're talking about the growing national debt, now more than $22 trillion as of last week. David Primo is with us, Associate Professor of Political Science and Business Administration at the University of Rochester. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Are you worried about the national debt? If so, what would you like to see lawmakers and President Trump do about it? Or do you agree with a lot of politicians that maybe it's a problem, but we've got bigger problems to deal with first? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our conversation about the $22 trillion national debt. David Primo is with us, Associate Professor of Political Science and Business Administration at the University of Rochester. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think of that growing IOU? How would you like to see President Trump and Congress tackle the debt? Or are there other things they should be doing first? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. To your calls, Guy is with us in West Allis. Guy, hello.
Well, my biggest comment or concern is that when it seems like we do get a surplus of cash and they look to spend it for a tax break, especially for the wealthy, instead of applying that towards the debt, which actually would benefit the wealthy and everybody. Why is that? So they are looking to give that. I know it spurs the economy, but it hasn't spurred the economy that much.
Guy, thanks for the call. That's the argument, including last year's tax cuts. David, is that okay? Yes, up front, these tax cuts will increase the deficit, but they're going to generate economic activity. It's going to generate more tax revenue. It'll bring down the deficit ultimately. What do you think of that long-running debate?
It's very difficult to sort of assess the precise impact of a tax cut on revenues. By most accounts, it's very difficult to construct an analysis where the tax cuts, quote, pay for themselves. That said, the president had lots of reasons why he thought the tax cuts were a good idea. We could have a debate about whether or not those were legitimate reasons. I think the argument that they're going to pay for themselves is probably not the one that we should use. So from a purely deficit-based or from purely debt-based perspective, right? It's difficult to argue that the tax cuts are going to help matters. That said, if there are two ways to think about the budget. One is to think about, well, we need to increase taxes to deal with the deficit and deal with the debt. The other is that we need to reduce spending. And ultimately, I mean, I sort of tend to come down on the side of we need to think about spending first and then taxes, because we don't need the tax revenue unless we have the spending piece in place. So the reason we need the tax revenue is because we have such high levels of spending, and we're going to continue to see those high levels of spending. That said, realistically, politically, it's going to take a balanced approach where you deal with both the tax side, the revenue side, and the expenditure, the spending side, in order to narrow the deficit. And I think it's worth spending 10 seconds just thinking about the difference between all these terms, right? Because we throw around debt and deficit a lot, but the deficit is the amount of new debt, essentially, that we incur in any given fiscal year. And the debt is just the sum total of all of those deficits. So if we run a surplus in 1 year, that's going to reduce the debt by a pretty trivial amount. What we need to do is have consistent surpluses if we actually want to bring down the debt, or if we just want to say, let's stabilize the debt, let's keep it at the current share of the economy that it's at, then we need to run very low deficits relative to the size of the economy, much lower than we're running right now.
When's the last time we had a surplus? Was that back in the 90s?
It would have been right around the tail end of the Clinton administration. And it's very humorous as a political scientist to watch the debate then when they were talking about what we were going to do with all of the surpluses we were going to have for the foreseeable future. Because, to be honest, political science 101 would tell you that the structure of U.S. democracy, the incentive structure of elected officials, is to whittle away those surpluses just about as quickly as that they could construct them. That was a confluence of very positive events. We had a good economy. We had a president and a speaker of the House in Newt Gingrich who reached a budget deal that temporarily led to surpluses. But as soon as that happened, we figured out ways to go back into the red once more. So that the question is, can we ever get back to that norm of balanced budgets that we saw in the 1800s and early 1900s? I think once we've reached the scope and scale of the federal government that we have now, it's going to be very difficult to do unless we see a different sort of leadership in Washington than we're seeing right now.
Talking about the national debt with David Primo from the University of Rochester. Back to your calls now. John is with us in Mount Horeb. John, hello.
Hello, thank you. The question that I have, and I am very concerned about the national debt, is could your guests talk about how the crisis is going to manifest itself? You always hear, today we hear that from our guests that there's going to be a crisis down the road, and I've heard that from others as well, but I never hear about what is that crisis going to look like? How is it going to manifest itself? Does your guest have any thoughts on that?
John, thanks for the call. David, thoughts on what a national debt crisis could look like anyway?
That's a fantastic question because, and in some senses, it's unanswerable in that the precise nature of crises are unpredictable. So very few analysts predicted the Great Recession before it happened. Economists are not great at prediction, but the contours of the crisis that I think certainly we can talk about. Eventually, U.S. debt is going to reach such a level. And the problem is we don't know exactly what that level is, that investors will lose faith in the ability of the U.S. to credibly pay back that debt. When that happens, and there are economists, to be fair, who don't believe that we'll ever be at that point, but when it happens, I do think it's certainly possible if we do nothing right now. When it happens, it's going to happen on a dime. It's not that it's going to get announced tomorrow everybody's going to stop buying up U.S. treasuries. It, just as we saw in Greece a few years back, once you have investors lose faith and confidence in a country, things can go poorly very quickly. So you're going to see investors pull out of U.S. treasuries, which eventually is going to lead to a massive spike in interest rates, you're going to start to see a pullback in investment, which is going to lead to a recession, which is going to have reduce U.S. revenues, which is going to make increased deficits, which is going to create the problem that we'll need to get more debt to pay off to deal with those deficits, which is going to increase interest rates even further. And you sort of see where this is going. We're going to end up in a debt spiral and we're going to end up not like Greece. I think that was a situation where you had a much smaller economy that was much more fragile. But we're going to see a lot of economic pain. And the important thing to keep in mind, besides the fact that this is uncertain, so we don't know exactly when this is going to happen, but we do know that if we start taking steps today to manage entitlements, to think about a reform of the entire budget process that includes both taxes and spending, it's going to be much easier to deal with our fiscal problems for the foreseeable future. The analogy I always make is to a diet. It's much easier to think, okay, I'm going to start eating healthy today so that in 30 years I feel good, versus saying, let me wait until I get sick and then I'm going to go on a really extreme diet. It's much easier to start now on being healthy in our personal lives, but just similarly, it's much easier for the federal government to start now in terms of dealing with our long-term problems than waiting until we hit a crisis.
John, thanks for the call. Going out to Brian in Heartland. Brian, hi.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I just want to hear what your expert thinks on curtailing military spending to solve this, at least part of this debt crisis. I'm a veteran myself, and I still think that the U.S. spends way too much in defense. Last statistic I checked, I think we spend more than the next 8 countries combined, and most of which are allies.
Brian, thanks for the call. In our last minute or so, David, the role of military spending, which has gone up in the last year or so.
So military spending is controversial for all sorts of reasons, but just focusing purely on the numbers. Military spending is a relatively small share of federal spending compared to so-called mandatory spending. So so-called mandatory spending, Medicare, Social Security, that's about 70% of our spending. The other 30%, which includes defense and includes so-called discretionary spending, the other programs that the government spends money on, that makes up the rest of spending. So we're not going to be able to make much of a dent in our long-run fiscal problems by tackling defense spending. That doesn't mean that if you have a preference for lower spending, that it wouldn't help to reduce defense spending. But in the grand scheme of things, I don't think that that piece of government spending is going to make much of a dent, nor is reducing discretionary spending, frankly, in general, going to make much of a dent relative to, again, entitlement spending, which is consuming an ever larger share of our federal budget.
David, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Oh, it's great to be with you. Thank you.
David Primo is an associate professor of political science and business administration at the University of Rochester. We talked with him about the growing national debt as of last week, over $22 trillion.